Okay, so we're just beginning the retreat, but just beginning a period of the having a schedule and group practice. And as we're beginning this retreat period, then to I think it's important to recognize that we have the opportunity to focus on our meditation practice and to start to review our relationship to the practice. And when I was in Thailand, I put a lot of instruction around how to establish a sense of confidence within oneself as to when our practice of Dhamma, and whether it's meditation practice or the application of Dhamma in our daily lives, is is actually working or not working. Is it going in a good direction? Is it going in a, is it correct or right? And so often, what people tend to worry about or focus attention on is the kind of methodologies, or trying to get technique, or trying to have a particular view that is somehow intellectually correct, or whatever, or having the doing enough, walking meditation, sitting meditation. Am I sitting? How long am I sitting? How long am I walking? And you know, although these all play a part in our practice, the Buddha always emphasizes the aspect of you know, whatever we're doing, is it for the increase of wholesome dhammas and the decrease of unwholesome dhammas, or are unwholesome dhammas increasing and wholesome dhammas decreasing? And that's more the things that we have to pay attention to, and the aspect of let me say wholesome, skillful. I mean, the kusala dhammas, akusala dhammas, and kusala is always associated with those states of mind or being that are more peaceful, more clear, more positively fruitful, more intelligent. In those are in inverted commas, and the akusala associated with the you say more confusion, more dullness, more unskillful states of mind associated with greed, hatred, delusion, and then resulting in unfortunate, unwanted states of being. So that to be able to pay attention to that, because sometimes we, you know, just because we're maybe even sitting in meditation, remember, you know, Ajahn Chah being asked of how You know, how long should we be? How long should we be sitting? And you know, is it good to be doing long periods of sitting meditation? And Ajahn Chah's response was, he said, well, you know, I've seen chickens sitting on their nests for long periods of time. I don't see them getting wise. And so that you know, it isn't just the going through the physical motions of the form of the practice, but it's the attuning to the internal result of our effort and application of the teachings of the practice. And you know, unwholesome dhammas are sometimes we think of you know, unwholesome dhammas, unskillful, akusala. It has to be really bad for it to be akusala. And of course, the Buddha's laying out of the akusala is you know, a good. Particularly in our meditation practice, a good rule of thumb to be checking is just the five hindrances. These are akusala dhammas, sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness / worry, skeptical doubt. These are akusala dhammas. The mind is not in a suitable state for growth and development. These are things that block and hinder our development of practice. So that just the inability to actually even stay awake, keep some kind of interest in a meditation practice or listening to a Dhamma talk. You can't even keep awake for that, then it's hard to picture much growth and development. And so that rather than be obsessing with the details of technique and methodology, how to apply the mind so that there's they're not getting swept up in the different hindrances, and to really bring that to the foreground of the practice. It doesn't really matter what technique one's using, what method one is applying. Are there hindrances or are there not hindrances? How to apply the mind so that the mind isn't swept up in hindrances. And it was like there was a question the other day that I'm talking about of dealing with drowsiness in morning meditation, and is it okay to do walking meditation and. You know, my initial response before giving sort of advice and techniques was just that emphasizing the fact that an hour or whatever period of time of mindfulness in whatever posture is more beneficial than sitting in dullness and sleepiness. And so that the importance of being able to arouse mindfulness and to arouse a quality of awareness and attention is much more fruitful than just doggedly sitting and with a drowsy, dull states of mind, and You know, that doesn't mean sitting and proliferating either. It's just you know, sitting and proliferating and daydreaming and just in order to not be drowsy. So it's like learning how to apply mindfulness, learning how to apply attention, learning how to sustain attention, and taking my own, say, core practice or root practice that I teach from, the mindfulness of breathing. And of course, that's the most common meditation technique that the Buddha himself taught. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has to do it. Ajahn Chah was never... there's no such thing as the kind of the Ajahn Chah method of meditation, because Ajahn Chah would willingly give people different techniques, different advice, different opportunities for exploring and investigating varieties of methods, so that learning how to apply the principles that underlie if I give instruction in mindfulness of breathing, that one picks up the principles underlying that and applies it to the particular technique. Even if one's using mindfulness of breathing, it doesn't necessarily mean that one just dutifully follows the particular technique. One has to pay attention to how am I applying the mind, how am I establishing awareness, how am I cultivating the foundations of mindfulness, and the those aspects of mindfulness are when the Buddha himself speaks of mindfulness, there's stock phrases that the Buddha uses, and the quality of atapi. Yeah, atapi sampajana satima vinaya lokeya pichatomanasa. It's just the facets of mindfulness and awareness. Atapi being the application of effort. That mindfulness is not a passive noting or a passive recognition of phenomena. There is an application of effort that needs to be developed. When it's translated into Thai, that word atapi means the putting forth the effort to overcome defilements. Overcoming defilements, overcoming hindrances. If one sort of sitting there being so-called mindful, exercising choiceless awareness, which oftentimes means one spacing out, these catch words that people throw around, and we kind of call meditation. It's really important to review what we assume. Sort of my generation of meditators would be conditioned by the phrase, be here now. And it seeps into the assumptions of be here now, okay. But particularly thinking of sampajano, in sense of clear comprehension. And one of the aspects of clear comprehension is actually being able to learn how to relate the present moment to the past and the future. Having that clarity of awareness and understanding that takes on the relationship of ourselves to the world around us, of ourselves to our inner states of mind and how they function and what the sequence of causal conditioning, so that we do have clear comprehension. Being sort of, you know, kind of just being here now and absorbing into the present moment, and sort of, you know, it's kind of like a small child that sort of absorbs into the experience of the moment. But you know, it might have the innocence of a small child, but it also has the wisdom of a small child. We don't need to. We need a bit more savvy than that. And the quality that the Buddha points to of sampajano as clear comprehension, as an aspect of mindfulness. And it's important that we're applying mindfulness and applying how our mindfulness relates to the circumstances around us, to the appropriate to time and place, appropriate to circumstance, understanding the nature of the sense of self that is carried in, and the clear comprehension of how to establish an unentangled awareness. It's so essential as a part of our practice of meditation, of mindfulness, the quality of so that it's atapi sampajano, of effort, of clear comprehension, of mindfulness itself. And again, the mindfulness is not just sort of, you know, again, these buzzwords that get thrown around, bare awareness. I mean, what does bare awareness mean? It has a constellation of assumptions, but it doesn't actually mean anything. And so that when one of the best definitions of, say, Satima, one possessing mindfulness, one possessed of mindfulness, then is that mindfulness is that function in nature that draws the objects of awareness, the objects of the senses, into the heart, so that there's a clear recognition and experience of our sense contact. It's not just sort of glossing over, gliding over, skimming over what we experience, but it's drawing it in into the heart, so that it's cognized clearly and experienced, which is, you know, part of the discourse on mindfulness of breathing. And there's this sort of the verb of patisangveti, and it's experiencing fully. So experiencing fully the body, experiencing fully feelings. These are this quality of experiencing fully. And what we're doing, so that the these aspects of mindfulness are You know, learning how to apply it, learning how to engage with the application of mindfulness. So that, and the last quality, vinaya lokeya bichato manasa, the sense of relinquishing the likes and dislikes towards the world, that sense of the way that the mind swings according to desire and aversion, the liking and disliking, the attraction and repulsion. That we spin around. We're constantly kind of spinning and off balance, out of kilter, and that being able to apply mindfulness so that this is a place of balance, so that to be establishing that balance, attending to that quality of balance, so that we're not drawn into those opposing swings of the way that the moods vacillate, and that's our anchor. So that to be able to create a center of attention and awareness, to create a foundation of mindfulness. So then, as we begin our practice and begin this period of practice in the sitting meditation, in the walking meditation, doing our chores, listening to Dhamma, to be focusing on how to create mindfulness. What's the good of just sort of plugging away at some sort of technique if one isn't really got a handle on what mindfulness is? What good does it do to just sort of blow air in and out of your nose if you're not really being mindful? What good is it to even sit and read Dhamma books if you're not really mindful? So that fundamental quality of mindfulness has to be brought to the fore. It has to be brought into being. And if there isn't that mindfulness, then there's a real clear lack of direction. So that to begin the retreat with really establishing direction,